separate activities. But those activities are actually being done by material nature. Now, this... We will come to that in a minute. But in verse 15, Krishna makes another related point, that not only is it that the soul is not doing these things, but it's also a fact that the super soul is not doing these things. The super soul. Now, so far, we haven't really heard much, if anything, about the super soul. Super soul meaning that form of the Lord who is controlling this material nature. Not actually Krishna in his original form, but the Paramatma. So the Paramatma, he is sort of, he's overseeing your getting your reactions, whatever you're due. He's overseeing that. But he's not causing it. Again, he's not victimizing you, that you're innocently sitting there, and the super soul decides that I think I'll send a bit of suffering to this person for no particular reason. No. So the super soul is definitely innocent. Or should we say, he is not really acting. He's not acting. And the soul is not acting. And it would be rather unfair to say that the modes of material nature are simply acting. So who is acting? How is this all going on? That we are acting, we're getting the reactions for our actions, and so on and so forth. How is it happening? Any suggestions?
Desire.
Yes, very good. First time. It's not that we are acting, or the soul. It's not that the soul is acting. But we are desiring. And on the basis of our desire, Krishna, he makes the arrangements so we can carry out those desires, manifest those desires. And when we do carry out those desires, then there are certain consequences, the laws of karma. There are certain consequences to all of the different activities which result from our desires. And those karmic reactions, they're coming through material nature under the direction of the supersoul. So, it's not actually stated in as many words, but that is really the idea. That we are responsible. Why? Because we are desiring. In other words, I'm sitting here. I hope everyone is awake. Is everyone awake? Pretty much. So I'm sitting here, and now I'm lifting up my left arm. So, is it just that I'm sitting here, and now the modes of material nature are just lifting up my arm, and I see, gosh, my arm's lifting up. Or is it the super soul, you know, that, oh, the super soul's lifting my arm. Is it actually me, meaning the soul? That somehow or other the soul is now going into action and sending energy out and, you know, carrying out this function. No, not exactly. But what is happening is that I'm sitting here and I'm desiring. I would like my left arm to lift up. So the super soul perceives this desire, and also the demigods. I don't know which demigod is in charge of my left arm, but there's one demigod, I'm sure. And that demigod, being connected through the arrangements of the supersoul, that demigod is now causing my left arm to lift up. So it's not exactly that I'm acting, but I am desiring. Do you follow that point? It's an interesting point and it's an important point. Just like we have these bodies. How did we get them? We desired them. It's not exactly that we acted, that we walked down, you know, like in a shop. You walk down and then you choose, oh, I want this one. We never acted in that way. We didn't actually choose our body. But we desired in a certain way, so we got the particular bodies that we had. Some of us might wonder, how on earth did I get this body? Couldn't I have got a better one? But it just shows our rather sort of perverted condition, that actually we desired this particular body with all its various features and defects and so on. It's all going on the basis of desire. And the modes of facilitating, and the supersoul is overseeing that facilitating done by the modes. We'll take questions at the end. So, in verse 16, Krishna says that, you know, if you're bewildered, if you don't understand this, then it'll be a big mystery how all the any of these things are happening. It'll be a big mystery. But when you get the right transcendental knowledge, including understanding the difference between the soul and the body, including understanding what are the modes, including understanding the supersoul and Krishna and all these things, then it becomes very clear. Just like when the sun lights up everything in the daytime, then it's very obvious. You don't need to make a big effort to see this or see that. Whereas through our own efforts to understand all these deep and subtle subjects, it's like taking a little torch and trying to see everything in the world around and put it all together and come to some coherent sort of understanding. It's really not going to happen. It's extremely unlikely. Actually, it's really not going to happen at all. Now, from verse 17 to 23, this is describing the consciousness of the karma yogi who is fixed in Krishna consciousness. Now, it is interesting to note, and I hope you read through here, you might have noted that it's not exactly that Krishna is extremely explicit and says that he sees me and he understands me and he realizes me and like that. Not exactly. Krishna does use terminology which can be applied from the point of view of the Krishna conscious person. But it can also be applied from the point of view of the person who's not a devotee. Like when Krishna refers to the Supreme in these verses following up to 23. He generally refers to the Supreme as, did any of you note what he refers to the Supreme as in the Sanskrit? Brahma, Brahman. Now, we explained the other day that Krishna is Brahman. Krishna is actually Parabrahman. So whenever you see the word Brahman or Brahma appearing in Sanskrit in any of our books, in the verses, then you can understand that it may refer to Krishna. That depends on the context. You have to see the context. If it says that this Brahman has senses and is performing activity, then you know that this Brahman being referred to is Krishna, Parabrahman. But if it says that this Brahman is impersonal and indivisible and so on, then you can take it that this is actually the impersonal Brahman being referred to. And you can get extremely confused if you don't understand this point. You can get too confused, actually. You'll get bewildered. So it's very important to understand this point. And in this particular case here, in these verses from 17 to 23, to understand that Krishna is now describing the karma yogi who has understood all this transcendental knowledge which has been presented so far, including the knowledge about Krishna, and even including the knowledge of the supersoul, which was just referred to in verse 15. In verse 15, the Sanskrit word vibhu is there, which Prabhupada translates as the Supreme Lord. So vibhu, strictly speaking, if you translate this word vibhu into English, then it means the source of all energy, the source of all potency, The source of all opulence. This is what Vibhu means. Now, who is that? That is, within this material world, that is the Supersoul. So now, from 17 to 23, it's a description of the consciousness or the state of the Karma Yogi, who is in Krishna consciousness and particularly has some understanding of the Supersoul. So verse 17, Krishna is saying that when your intelligence, mind, faith, and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, meaning and including the Supersoul, then you can advance very nicely. And verse 18, it's a very well-known verse, the humble sages who see with equal vision, the learned, gentle, Brahmin, cow, elephant, dog-eater, why do they see so equally? Not just because they understand the soul is there. Of course, they do understand that, but it's not only for that reason. But it's also because they know the Supersoul is there. And we won't read through the purport now, but if you read through the purport, you'll see that Srila Prabhupada is basically explaining this verse in terms of the recognition of the Supersoul. Another interesting little point, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, commenting on this verse, he particularly focuses on the last word, Samadarshana, which Prabhupada translates as equal vision. Sama means equal. Darshana, equal vision. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that you can translate this term, Sama, as being Sama. Ma is Lakshmi Devi. And sa means with. So sama darshana, he says, we can take it to mean that this sage who is seeing in this way, he is seeing sama with Lakshmi. Now who do you see with Lakshmi? You see Narayan. So he's seeing Lakshmi and Narayan. He's seeing Radha and Krishna, Sita Ram. Sama darshana. And in this way, he's seeing very equally, because he's seeing everything sama, in relationship with the Supreme Lord and his eternal consort. Then from 19 on till the next few verses, 19 to about 23, it's basically a description of the characteristics of such a Karma Yogi, who's fixed in Krishna consciousness. Like 19 says that Karma Yogi's mind is established in sameness and equanimity. Why? Because he understands that the Supersoul is in control. So whatever happens to me, that is being sanctioned by the Lord. So I don't need to get upset if something bad happens, or particularly elated if something good happens. So this is all to be understood in terms of consciousness of the Supersoul, as well as the soul and the three modes and like that. Right up to verse 23. Verse 23 is recommending patience. Krishna says that you may have to tolerate all these pushings, the urges of the senses and the mind. You may have to tolerate them right up until you give up this body. Don't expect to wake up tomorrow and find that your mind is completely free of material desire. You just have to carry on tolerating. To encourage us, he says something a little different in a couple of verses, but at this point, he says that you may have to tolerate till the time of death. So 24 to 26 is basically making the same type of description of the Karma Yogi, who's very nicely engaged in his spiritual practice in relationship with the Supersoul. 26 is giving this little further encouragement. Those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. So it's a fact that you may have to tolerate all these things until you leave your body. But also, if you really make a nice effort, if you constantly endeavor, then you can be liberated from these things even in the very near future. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, if you look down the purport about halfway down, Prabhupada quotes one verse, Darshana Dhyana Samsparshaya Matsya Kurama Vahangama. So, here, Krishna is speaking. I don't know what scripture it's from, but Krishna is speaking, and he says that certain species of life maintain their offspring simply by looking at them, by thinking of them, or just touching them. In other words, they don't really get intimately involved in the lives of their offspring. It's just a kind of distant type of contact they have. So Krishna says that similarly do I also. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains this verse in terms of verse 26 of this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that if the devotee is constantly engaged, as Krishna is advising here in verse 26, to be constantly endeavoring for spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna, even though he's a long way away, he's in Goloka and we are here, but Krishna will maintain his devotee and help his devotee, even from a long distance, because the devotee is so sincerely trying to please him and engage in devotional service and improve himself or herself, get out of Maya. So Krishna, even though he's at a great distance, through meditation, through his transcendental vision, or even through his touch as the super soul, Krishna will help his devotee. And when Krishna helps the devotee, then you can achieve the goal of spiritual life very soon. So this is very nice. Krishna's encouraging us. Verses 27 and 28, they're a little brief introduction to chapter 6. It may sound like Krishna is recommending that we should all sit down and focus our minds and suspend our breaths. Suspend your inward breath into your outward breath within your nostrils. I don't know if any of you would be able to do that. I'm sure I couldn't. Anyway, this rather extraordinary discipline of Ashtanga Yoga. So it's not really related to this chapter, actually. I mean, we don't want to accuse Krishna of putting something in the wrong place, but he's just introducing the idea. Because just in the next couple of verses, we're going to go into the subject of Ashtanga Yoga. Then verse 29, very important verse, very nice verse. Krishna's giving like the final purport to the subject of Karma Yoga, particularly Karma Yoga as action and Krishna consciousness. This is the mentality that the devotee or the Nishkam Karma Yogi should have. Three features are there. First is Bhoktaram Yajnatapasam, to understand that Krishna is the enjoyer of all our sacrifices, all the austerities that we perform, whatever, anything that you do. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, to recognize that Krishna is the supreme lord of everything and everyone, even the demigods and heavenly planets. And Suridam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna is our benefactor and well-wisher. He's our real friend. So if we can understand and relate with Krishna in these three ways, then Krishna says, Gyatva ma shantim richati. So he says very clearly, ma, me. If you're in consciousness of me in these ways, then shantim richati, you'll achieve peace. You'll get out of Maya and you'll be able to go back to Godhead. So this is like the final purport of Karma Yoga. So any comments or questions? Dr. Mark, you wanted to say something? Yes, you are a soul. We are all spirit souls. And we are desiring. We, meaning the soul, is desiring. Yeah, we are responsible. It's not that just the mind is desiring and the soul is simply being dragged along. But at the root of it all is us. I mean, the mind is also desiring. But we then accept those desires. Oh yes, sounds like a good idea. Like that. So we have the final responsibility. Yeah. Well, the basic principle we just talked about, there are demigods in charge. The demigods are in charge of everything. There are 33 million of them. And of course, you know, we know the main ones, like Durga's in charge of the whole thing, Shiva's in charge of ignorance, Brahma's in charge of passion, Indra's in charge of the rain, and so on and so forth. But then, you know, 33 million demigods, that's an awful lot. And each one has a duty. Prabhupada once, I don't know where it is exactly, but he said that there's a demigod also who's in charge of the blinking of your eyes. Even something insignificant like that. So all these things, like sometimes, you know, it's meant to be a sign of auspiciousness. If your left side starts sort of quivering or your left eye starts fluttering, or inauspicious if it happens on the right side. So it's not just some sort of impersonal, like, supernatural phenomenon. But actually they're demigods who are in charge of these things, and it appears that they may give some, like, advance notice that something is going to happen by making, like, omens. Suddenly you see that dogs are howling at you, or whatever it may be. So this is all going on under the control of demigods.
So it's not like deities as such. You know, like there's a deity for the earth, there's a deity for the infinite.
Yes, they're also like that.
But I mean, maturely we say that we lift our arm in court, no one analyzes it. There are muscles in the arm.
Yes.
And there are nerves that lead from the muscles to the brain.
Yes.
And then there is the brain which desires. Willing. So, if I desire to lift my arm, they draw a relationship between the arm and the actual nerves and the muscles.
Yes. Well, the demigods are activating the system in that way. But if, according to your karma, you are meant to lose the ability to lift your left arm if you get paralyzed, something like that, the same muscles are there, the same nerves, the same brain, but now they can't do it. Why? Now they may say that there's some sort of malfunction in the brain that is just like a mechanistic phenomenon. But we would say that the demigod, because the demigod is just giving your karma, he's part of the administration of karma. So the demigod has been told, okay, this chap is due to lose, through his karma, the use of his left arm. So the demigod, you may desire, I want to lift my arm, I want to do this or do that, but you can't. So that's because the demigod has withdrawn his, you know, whatever it is that he does, which activates that system. Now that, of course, is unseen to the scientists. You know, its first manifestation on the gross level may be that some part of the brain sort of pops. They may even be able to identify that, oh, look, this part of the brain is, something went wrong with it. They can't see that actually the demigod was pressing the buttons and causing it all to happen. So that's a pity. But, you know, that's going on a more subtle level. And they'd have to become educated in these things to appreciate the point. Anyway, but that is basically how it's happening.
We don't do anything as such.
We simply desire, and we receive. We receive, yeah, according to our karma. Like, you've probably seen that picture was on the front cover of Back to Godhead a few years ago, quite a few years ago. Yeah, like puppets. One man's digging the hole, the other man is like the boss. And up above are the demigods, controlling like puppets. So it's working like that. Well, see, Krishna is meant to be the enjoyer of all of our activities. He's meant to be. In fact, Krishna makes that point in, sort of alludes to that point in the ninth chapter. Yat karoshi yadashnasi yajjahosi tadasi yat. That you should do everything for me. So Krishna is meant to be the enjoyer of all sacrifice or austerity and everything that you do. But of course, because we are conditioned, we are performing so many activities without trying to please Krishna. We just want to please ourselves. But the basis of karma yoga and basis of bhakti yoga for that matter is to recognize this fact that Krishna is meant to be the enjoyer of all my activities, including sacrifices and austerities and everything. He's meant to be. So therefore, let me act in that way. Act simply for his pleasure. But it's not that if you, or if a karmi, a conditioned soul, just carrying out their daily activities of sense gratification, it's not that Krishna is enjoying that. No. He's meant to be, but we are prone to perform activities which are not enjoyable for him. So the right idea is to recognize his position and then start to act in those terms. So one last point. Yes.
When we get to the modes fighting for supremacy or influencing us to be a part of the world, how do we understand who is actually the dual then when we hear the modes is influencing us?
Well, the modes are influencing us under the direction of the demigods. Mode means, like, passion means Lord Brahma's influence, particularly. So, the idea of the modes fighting shouldn't be taken too literally. It's not like they're actually fighting. And one may win, you know, just because it happens to win. But, you know, the fact is that the modes fluctuate according to your karma. You're meant to be under the influence of goodness now, so goodness becomes predominant. But now, due to some karma, now you're meant to become under the influence of ignorance. So there, you know, it changes from goodness to ignorance. It appears there's like some battle. It's not exactly. But there's just a transition to another mode becoming more influential. But all these things are going on under the modes. Everything. Krishna says that within this world there's nothing but the modes, actually. Every function of the material energy can be understood in terms of